good morning. You're listening to 88.7 WHCL-FM, Clinton, New York. I'm your host, Pete Bianco. This show is titled The Ringer, and my guest today is Anita Vasquez-Tubo. Anita, thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me, Pete. It's my pleasure.
One of my maybe first interviews, close to the first, was with David Kennedy, and he was telling me about the problems with mercury fillings. I was just wondering, do you happen to know David, because he's also a Californian?
Oh, I absolutely do. I've actually been working with David for about 13 years now, and actually it was his birthday last week, so I saw him just that recently.
And I contacted him because I was interested in the topic of fluoride in the drinking water, but as we were talking, we drifted off into the mercury subject. So what got you interested in mercury?
I discovered in 2000 that I had been mercury poisoned by the 13 fillings that I had implanted in my teeth. Actually, I had one up until my early 20s, and then 12 more were placed at once. And within 6 months, I had my first bout of what was diagnosed as chronic adult asthma. It took a long time, and I don't want to start giving too many dates because then people will figure out how old I am. In any case, I searched high and low for why I would develop adult asthma when I was a very strong, healthy, you know, young person, and I was a dance major in college, and it really came out of nowhere. And it's very curious that I was here with another colleague of mine, Dr. Blanche Gruby, who I believe you've interviewed.
Yes.
And we had a discussion, and she said, oh, Anita, you were exposed at an acute level when they placed 12 fillings at once. And it had never dawned on me, although I know about acute exposure. I'm like, oh, my God, yeah, that's actually what happened to me. So, you know, fast forward many years later, I find out through some testing and a blood test that I had been mercury poisoned all these years. And that was the reason that my health had been declining, you know, for a very, very long time.
Now, I learned a little bit about mercury toxicity, and I thought that the testing was difficult until recently because of newer technologies. Is that the case?
It's, you know, like the age of the technology in general, everything is pretty much getting better and better every single day. So, yes, the technology nowadays, they can determine whether you're mercury poisoned from eating fish or mercury poisoned from your teeth. Mm. And that's a colleague of ours, Dr. Chris Shade, and it's called a mercury speciation test. The typical older types of technology that are also useful, there's a variety for hair analysis, and, you know, you can do blood tests, and there's not a lot of labs that do it, but there are, you know, different methodologies of testing for mercury toxicity from your teeth now, yes.
And so why are dentists still placing mercury fillings?
Well, in my opinion, it's because they don't want to change because they can no longer use the old, it doesn't hurt anybody. They can't be that ignorant in 2013 with all that's, you know, even available on the Internet. So people that want to continue to use mercury fillings, they're just, you can't say that they're uninformed because the information is there for anybody. But I think it's because they don't want to change. They don't really care. And it's tragic dentists who are, you know, they're there to take care of our health are the ones that are actually hurting our health the most, I believe, out of any profession.
I've heard that the debate over whether mercury is safe or not in the dental field has been going on since the late 1800s.
That is correct. It the inception of dental mercury, the premise of dental mercury was based on whether it's safe or not, and the American Dental Association was actually formed because they wanted to use dental mercury. And the dental surgeons, who were also doctors, signed an oath of ethics saying, that, no, we aren't going to use that, but the dental craftsmen who also shoed horses and, you know, built houses and so on, they said, oh, it's quick and easy to use. And instead of, you know, yanking out your tooth with no Novocaine, they said, you know, mercury's a good solution. So it became a money thing from the get-go, and profit over health. It's kind of where we are today.
Mm. Do you know where dental mercury is sourced from, where it originates from before it gets to the dentists?
Mercury is actually an ore. It's from the cinnabar ore, and it's actually mined. Now, what has happened over the last 10 years, the largest mine that has been in operation is from Almaden, Spain, but they closed that mine. The last remaining official mine is in Kazakhstan.
Hmm. I heard or read years ago from Dr. Hulda Clark that she was testing people's dental amalgams and found that there was thallium in them. And she said that that was added to thermometers in the Arctic that were mercury thermometers to make them go into colder temperatures. And she had some questions as to if this mercury was coming from a place that was making thermometers for Arctic temperatures. Did you ever come across that information?
No, but I do. I know about Hulda Clark. She was one of the pioneers. And as usual, the pioneers are always persecuted.
Mm.
You know, and it's a shame. It's really a shame because when you look at the history of amalgam and you see the great works of people that have, you know, studied the problem with mercury, and it's probably the most studied elements on the planet because of its toxicity. I mean, it goes all the way back before science was really invented. It was the alchemy, the guys, you know, from, you know, hundreds and thousands, well, not thousands, maybe thousands of years ago is in Greek. The Greek time.
Mm. One of the most convincing, arguments I'd say about the dangers of mercury was seeing that video, smoking teeth equals poison gas.
That's our buddy Dr. David Kennedy. Yes, sirree.
That was an amazing revelation to see that just a warm cup of coffee will cause your mercury amalgam to off-gas into your mouth.
Oh yeah, it's insane, and I look around and I wonder how people are actually functioning. But you know what? Here's how I feel, Pete. It's people are functioning, but they are not operating at the optimum level of health. They are operating so far below, and Dr. David Kennedy's video has been seen by more than a million people, which is a pretty big deal. And yet the American Dental Association and the World Dental Federation, they continue to beat the drum that, you know, it's not a problem, it's safe, and it's just, it's ludicrous. It's so offensive to me these days. I can only do what I do, and I try to do work on local, national, and international levels to get the word out and to help people that want to do the right thing.
How much mercury is used in the U.S., do you know, per year, an average?
You know, I used to have those numbers embedded in my brain, but I can tell you the global use is between 300 to 400 tons annually in the dental industry worldwide.
That's incredible when you think about what a small amount of what a small volume a filling is.
Yeah.
Wow.
And you think about it, and you think about mercury never dies. We do, but the mercury continues to live on, you know, and that's the bigger problem because, you know, I'm sure you're familiar with the Minamata Treaty that was just formalized in January through the United Nations Environmental Program.
No.
I was very fortunate to have attended all five sessions. The first one was in Stockholm, Sweden. The second one was in Japan, Chiba, Japan, you know, several months actually before the massive tsunami took place. The third one was in Nairobi, Kenya. The fourth was in Punta del Este, Uruguay. And the last one was in one of the headquarters of the UN, which is in Geneva.
And what is the Minamata Treaty?
The Minamata Treaty was it was named the Minamata Treaty. It was from the United Nations Environmental Program. The first time I attended a UN session was in 2002, where documentary filmmaker Kelly Gallagher and a group of us went to Geneva to attend what was then called the Global Mercury Assessment to see whether mercury was a significant enough global problem to have a treaty become formalized because of its usages in so many different applications. And that was my first go-round at the UN, and it was really an eye-opener. By 2010, they had decided that, yes, this is something so significant. And in fact, many colleagues of mine told me that if it wasn't for President Obama, we would have never had this treaty. The treaty would never have come to fruition. So he has verbalized in several of his State of the Union addresses that he really wants to do something about mercury. So this is really part of the treaty process. Now, what this treaty was designed to do was to educate and help decrease and eliminate the use of mercury in products and processes. Because of our tremendous efforts in the dental sector and because of the you know, dedicated dentists and scientists who have been working for this ban, we were able to get it into the treaty, even though the status quo would have had us get out of the treaty process a long time ago. But it's actually in the treaty now. There is no time certain for a global ban on dental mercury, but the actual text language, I actually don't have it in front of me, but at least I tell people it's a starting point. Now, we can take action. We can be proactive. We do not have to wait for the treaty to be ratified by any country. We can start now. So that's what we're doing.
Are there any countries now that aren't using mercury for fillings?
Yes. Norway, Denmark, and Sweden are from the Nordic Council of Ministries, and they have been mercury-free, some of the countries a little bit longer than others, but those three are actually out of the dental mercury business. In fact, some of your listeners may be interested in this. One of the greatest documents on the topic is by the Nordic Council, and if you go to www.norden.org and look in their search engine, mercury reductions are feasible. There's a 30-some-odd page booklet that talks about all of the different applications where mercury is used, from coal-fired plants to crematoriums to the dental sector and so on. And they gave solutions of how they transitioned out of mercury.
So for dentists who are dealing with removing mercury, what it's not just something where you go in there and you just drill it out and then you don't have to worry about it. You can do it all willy-nilly.
That was the other problem. I had them all put in at once. I had them all taken out at once, too, but not taken out under the, you know, protocols that are actually the right way to take them out. So when I actually do lectures myself, I tell people, oh, I did everything wrong, so I can tell you how to do it right. And you're absolutely right, Pete. It's a very serious business. Once you have mercury in your teeth, it is imperative that the patient goes to a dentist that does the proper protocol for safe removal. In fact, Dr. Blanche Gruby has a series on her website, which is www.drblanchegruby.com. And she has a series of extraordinarily informative videos, and her technique and her desire to protect not only her office staff but her patients is just tremendous.
I heard of a person who had their amalgams taken out, and they didn't. It wasn't done in the proper way, and they ended up in a wheelchair because of it.
That really would not surprise me, Pete. I have seen things. you know, as I said a little earlier, I don't know how people are actually up and moving around with the type of dental work that I have looked at, you know, over the years, the pictures and the people that I've met. And, you know, it's horrific. It's, you know, I can't understand. I look at some people and you can see that they have mercury. They have beautiful white teeth and then they have all of this mercury in it. And, you know, it would be pretty... I'd be pretty hard-pressed to believe that these people have cavities in every single one of their teeth when logic tells me otherwise, that they eat clean diets and they brush their teeth and the surfaces are all pearly white with, you know, no gum issues, and then all of a sudden they open their mouth and they have, you know, 10, 12, 13, 14 fillings. It's astounding to me. Well, it happened to me. I didn't have any cavities. The dentist that filled all of those fillings, he said, you have pits, which are these like microscopic dots. And he said, one day these will become cavities if you don't treat them. So more or less, he was telling me it was a preventative measure. And little did I dream that, you know, 6 months later, I would have my first asthma attack. So I know that I'm not the only one. I know that. That's why I got on this journey and said, you know, it's just not me. It's me and everybody I've ever met and probably a lot of people that I've yet to meet.
And what are some other signs of mercury toxicity from people who have mercury fillings?
Well, there's, you know, there's many books written on the topic, and one of them, the legendary Dr. Hal Huggins, wrote a book. It's called It's All in Your Head. And the symptoms of mercury toxicity range from neurological to kidney, liver, all of the target organs, your heart. There are studies that were done in, I believe it was Italy, the first one that was published, where, you know, kids that were athletes had 22,000 times the amount of mercury in their heart tissue dying from, you know, heart attacks on the field. And usually they don't have a lot of body fat, but these kids, you know, if they're inner city kids, it's, you know, they fill up all of their teeth and the next thing you know, they're gone.
It's incredible.
It is, and you can't imagine, you know, that people would, what people will do, supposedly in a healthcare profession to make money. And ignorance to me is no longer, it's not an option. You know, a dentist to me in 2013 cannot say, oh, mercury is safe, it's impossible. Oh, that, why? Because the American Dental Association says so. I mean, there are so many studies that are out there available to anybody who wants to look at them. I mean, I found them. I'm not a doctor or a scientist. You know, I'm a person that had the desire to learn the truth about this topic. And when I read Hal Huggins' book, you know, oh, so many years ago, I said, you know, this is it. It's logic to me. You know, how could a poison not be a poison? When it's a poison in every other application, you simply can't take it from one place and say it's safe. And every place else on the planet, it's a toxic, very toxic substance.
Right. Now, if you drop one of those compact fluorescent light bulbs and it has a mercury in it and it spills, you're supposed to call a hazmat cleanup crew for it. But if it's in your mouth, then it's going to be a safe situation.
Yeah, tell me about that, Pete. they even in the CFL light bulbs, right, they have dispose of properly contained mercury. You know, that's another scam. Don't get me started.
Now, besides the dentists having to take procedures to protect you and to protect themselves and their staff, once they remove the mercury from your mouth, what do they do with it to dispose of it properly?
Well, I know what they should do. Oh, boy, Pete, you're asking too many tough questions because here's the deal. Dentists, it should be mandatory in this country that every single dentist office has a mercury amalgam separator, which captures the mercury before it goes into the wastewater, because once it's in the wastewater, it's done. There are no systems in place to capture mercury once it gets into the wastewater treatment plants. They can't do it. There's no filtration system. But if they capture it at the source, which would be at the dental office, we'd be able to eliminate a significant amount of mercury going into the water, which would be a tremendous help to the environment. Now, here's the deal. I went to a congressional hearing once, and it's hysterical. When I think about it, I think, oh, my God. One of the people in the dental sector, for lack of a better word, I'll say our enemies, because they certainly are not my friends. They're killing people. You know, they're poisoning people and destroying health. And in the long term, if you don't have your health, you don't have anything. It doesn't matter. And the fella said, well, you know, why are you opposing to have mercury amalgam separators? He said, well, you know, we did it in, I believe it was Michigan, but one of the states had mandated amalgam separators, and there was 100% compliance. And the guy, maybe it was just even a town, maybe it wasn't even a state, but he said 100% compliance. Well, that's terrific. And he said, well, how did that happen so quickly? And he said, they were purchased by the government, and that is why they had 100% compliance. In other words, if it is not mandatory, and they call it best management practices, if it's not mandatory for the commercial, what we call, commercial dentists, like Delta Dental and those types of dental organizations that are not biological or holistic, these guys will not buy a piece of equipment that will protect the environment. And the EPA is trying to implement a nationwide mandate on that as we speak, and they're not there yet. But I'm telling you, there are dentists that I know personally that have taken upon themselves to be environmental stewards and do the right thing and buy this piece of equipment. Now, once the mercury is captured in this equipment, they then have to get, they have to package it in a very specific way. And it's picked up and recycled. And I believe most of the people send it out of the country to, like, England. It's a huge problem, Pete. No, in other words, there's no real recycling being done in a lot of countries. There's absolutely zero in South America, none. So the recycling of mercury and mercury waste, it's a real problem. It's a global problem. It's just not a U.S. problem.
So are the separators only used for dentists who are removing the mercury fillings, or are they also used when dentists are placing new mercury fillings?
Well, it should be for both sides of it, you know, and I just, you know, the thought of people still placing mercury fillings anywhere, it makes me nuts, because it's really unconscionable for people to do that in this day and age. To me, it's horrifying that somebody can actually put a poison in somebody's head. You know, I mean, it happened to me. It probably happened to you. And nowadays you can't feign ignorance. You just cannot do it. If you're in this profession, it is your duty. It is your fiduciary duty to your patients and to your staff and to people that you come in contact to do the right thing. And I when I was so naive when I started on this, you know, journey to have a global ban on mercury, I'm thinking, oh, now this is going to be easy. But it fooled me pretty fast. And we're talking about, you know, global economy and so much more because of the way this whole system has been set up. And, you know, if you have a healthy society, you don't need medicine. If you have
good point.
Yeah, I mean, it's a vicious cycle. I'll tell you this, the countries that have banned mercury in dentistry, their societies are healthier. They're putting out studies now that the absenteeism has significantly dropped off the health of their you know, employees, for example. It's just incredible. Statistically, if people are healthy, their work performance is significantly higher. So, you know, we're operating on a backwards idea, for lack of a better word. You know, we should be trying to make people healthy so that we're smarter, we're better, we can outperform people. You know what I mean? We're not operating at any level of health at all. So, I mean, just look around you. sometimes I think, you know, how are people ever going to get out of this? And, you know, the answer is a lot of people are not. You know, we can only help how many we can. But, you know, it's really a sad thing. It really is.
I heard that the greatest source of mercury air pollution in Europe is the dental fillings that are incinerated during cremation of corpses. Is that, have you heard of that?
Oh, absolutely. Crematoriums, especially here, a country that has huge problems with that is in England, and that's because their crematoriums are so old that they cannot be, for lack of a better term, retrofitted with a new type of mercury, I guess you would consider it a piece of equipment that they can install that would capture the mercury before it escapes into the air. So that's a huge problem for them. And then, you know, when you have a lack of space, that's another problem. But, yes, there was actually a place in California several years ago that was trying to sue because they said, listen, you know, shall we extract the teeth before cremating because of the toxicity that's being, you know, burned off and going into the air? But it also works for burial, too, because that gets into the groundwater and the soil. People aren't thinking about it. It's from human waste. It's from going to the dentist. You know, it's from breathing. It's a big deal. And it will continue long after we're gone. I mean, mercury doesn't go away. And once it's in the environment, you can't capture or contain it.
So it seems like there's a lot of hidden costs to using mercury. Like most issues, it's very difficult to see many of these things that don't happen until years later, or that are not direct consequences but indirect consequences.
That's absolutely true. And the thing is that more and more people are starting to, you know, open up, like programs like yourself and other programs that are now starting to talk about amalgam. For years, no one would talk about mercury. You know, you get a little tidbit here and there, but people we're not talking about it. Very recently, Dr. Oz I guess in his show, he tried to push as far as he could without losing sponsorship. But he opened the dialogue. So, you know, all of these things, I was at a conference several weeks ago at the Longevity Now conference, and Dr. Huggins spoke to a packed room. It was the first time that dentistry had ever been addressed in that forum, and he had four standing ovations in his two lectures, and I mean, they were long ones, and it was in homage to the knowledge and the wisdom and the information that he imparted on people that are very, very well read and very well educated on the topics of health, and they did not know just how bad it was. It was astounding.
Isn't there a video on Dr. Blanche Gruby's website showing what the mercury does to neurons in the brain?
Yes, there is. Yes, that was produced by the University of Calgary. Fritz Lorscheider was one of the people that worked on it. He's a colleague of ours. And that was produced, I want to say, in 2002, but that was one of the most significant pieces of in vivo videos that shows brain neuron degeneration live, and that was also published in the FASB journal, which is one of the premier scientific journals in the world, and the American Dental Association, I swear, you know, it just makes me so insane to think that while they buried the information, they distort it. And they do not say the truth. And it will be their demise. It will be their demise. And you know what? It's okay. Because you can only get away with bad things to so many people for so long. You know, this just isn't about people in America. This is the world. And the worst thing about it, Pete, is the people that I've met at the UN, there's so many developing countries, and that is the majority of the world's population. You know, you take a look at Latin America, you take a look at India and China and so on, and these societies, you know, they're below poverty, most of them, right? Mm. So, for example, if they have a mercury filling because we didn't operate quickly enough to get a ban on it, they'll probably die with it in their heads. And it's it becomes a moral issue. It becomes a society of poverty where, you know, it's a social justice issue that poor people can't get their mercury out even though they know that it is making them sick because they'll never have the technology, they'll never have the ability, they'll never have a dentist that can go in there like, you know, Dr. Gruby and her colleagues, you know, David Kennedy and those guys. They can't go in there and have their mercury removed ever once it's in. It's going to be there. And so even if we would stop using mercury today in dentistry, it at least another several generations before it's done. You know, and it won't be done within the environment, but it'll be done within the people. Do you follow what I'm saying?
Yes, yep.
So that's a... You know, I'm working as fast as I can.
Yeah.
And it's not easy. You know, I've been grinding on this for a long time now. And, you know, I finally see the movement simply because this UN treaty is the impetus for some real serious change.
Now, you've had some luck in California with this issue?
I actually, yes. We started an organization, a grassroots organization called Californians for Green Dentistry, and I'm the executive director of that organization. And, you know, it's, you know, when you're working in the zone, how things just happen very quickly.
Yes.
Myself and two colleagues of mine, Marisa Russo, who is a dental hygienist, and Christy Mills, who is a naturopath, it was, you know, the three girls, and we got together, and we really pushed quickly, and through, you know, hard work and perseverance, we had a resolution. The first one was in Costa Mesa, California. The documentary filmmaker, Kelly Gallagher, she shot all the footage for all of them, and then we did one in Santa Ana, which was not filmed simply because they simply just gave us the resolution. They agreed with the premise of having a mercury-free dental zone, and then Malibu, the city of Malibu. We also secured a resolution from LULAC, which is the League of Latin American United Citizens.
Now, is there any towns or counties in the U.S. that have been doing this on their own without the support of your organization?
No, and basically a resolution is more of a city stand against something. It's not a fact of law, but it's their statement saying, you know, we support this, and it's something that they should look at. Now, I truly believe, you know, once the rest of the world starts taking up, you know, unfortunately, the American Dental Association, also known as the World Dental Federation, they have such huge lobby power that they've been able to manipulate and continue to tell the lies that they have to everybody, saying that this is safe and that there's no other product that's acceptable for use. And there's a product for developing countries which is called ART, a traumatic restorative treatment, that is, you know, you don't even need a drill, you need nothing, you do not need electrical equipment, you don't even need a curing light. It's like a paste that you stick in a tooth that is decayed, and it works.
Wow.
And it was, it's astounding. But, you know, I heard a lot of stories when I was at this last UN conference because they were really trying hard to get it out of the treaty when, in fact, dental mercury was identified in the top five of products used globally in usage. You know, we're talking the top five, and I don't want to say it was number two or number three, but it was in the top five for sure.
Well, still, that's top five. That's pretty big worldwide usage.
That's right. That's right.
For people who have this, and if they try to talk to their dentist about it, and the dentist tries to talk them into the mercury fillings, what then?
You know what I'd tell them, Pete? I'd tell them to get up and jump out of there fast because that office is probably so contaminated they can get sick from being in there.
Mm.
And that's no joke. I'm not kidding you. I am not kidding you. If a dentist office has carpeting in it, oh, my goodness. You know, the dental profession, they're all so sick, you know. They have the highest suicide rate of any profession, the highest divorce rate. I mean, these guys... You know, they're not well, and my thing is that I can't use ignorance as an excuse. You know, their ignorance is no longer my problem, and this will all come up, Pete. You know, programs like yours and other people that are starting to say, hey, listen, we need to start talking about it, or I know somebody that took out their fillings properly, and now. You know, they're a million times better and so on, because a lot of people get better. If you do it right the first time, your chances for a strong recovery, and, you know, I'm not saying that everybody's going to get 100%, and I'm not going to say that everybody could recover from getting their fillings out or doing, you know, what Dr. Gruby would refer to as a dental revision, which is something that she does that's absolutely amazing because I've seen it, you know, and I can attest to her ability simply because I've watched her do so many surgeries.
Mm.
When you do a dental revision, you restore the mouth as holistically as you possibly can, and it's like people get their lives back. And it's not, you know, over a period of a long term; it's a period of like almost immediately. And depending on how sick you are or what your dental problems are. You know, a lot of people can restore a good portion of their health if they do their dental properly the first time. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yes. So you get a lot of resistance, though, from dentists who want to, when you approach the dental industry and trying to change their minds about mercury. But what is the general public's reaction when they hear about these types of things?
Well, you know, the public, the general public, okay, you have all these different societies, you know, you have, you know, your upper end society, and then you have your middle class, and then you have the lower socioeconomic society, and, you know, and the higher income scale, these people don't even think that they're using mercury anymore, and when you say, oh, yeah, they are, they're like, oh, no, you're kidding me.
Mm.
I haven't had mercury for 20 years, you know, and I'm like, they put $100 million a year in this country into the mouths of unsuspecting consumers.
And they call them silver sometimes.
They call them silver all the time. Even, you know, dentists are so trained to use the word silver that even dentists who are biological that are just now finding out about this type of dentistry, they still refer to it as mercury silver fillings. You know what I mean? It's wild, but it's a hard... It's a hard habit to break, but
so,
I'm telling you, the guys that have stepped out and stepped up, and they find out about it, and they break the habit, they break this chain of you know, horrific dental abuse, I would say, you know, toxic poisoning of people, they're the heroes in my book, because they had the courage to step out of what they were trained to do.
The mercury fillings are 50% mercury and 25% silver, and is that right? And then what's the rest of it?
Well, they say 48 to 54% mercury per tooth, and it is a mixture of copper, tin, and zinc.
Mm.
But the majority of the product is mercury. Now, when you talk about the manufacturer safety data sheet and contraindications for the use of mercury, they say... You know, there was one very, very famous one, and I'm telling you, I've been doing this so long that it surprises me. And this, I believe it was Dentsply was the manufacturer, and they said it was contraindicated for children under six, for people that had kidney problems, and I believe pregnant women. So I would like to know how many of your listeners out there who were ever a woman. Or took a child into a dental office, did they ever say, oh, well, we shouldn't put it in your teeth if you're under six or you're pregnant or if you have kidney problems?
Right, yeah, I've never heard any warning from a dentist about fillings. No talk about it.
No, they don't. They don't, and it's their fiduciary duty to do so because it's a warning. It's like when you go to the pharmacy and you get a prescription and the doctor comes over and says, hey, do you know, these are the contraindications. For example, if you're taking this medication, don't take it with this and so on. They don't do that. And what had happened in the 60s was that they changed the mercury amalgam formulation to a high copper amalgam, which increased the volatility and the vapors coming off faster.
Oh, wow.
Which is, you know, it shot up to the sky. So, and another problem is, oh, man, see what happens when you ask somebody to come on and talk about mercury and dentistry and all the, you know, people will not want to go to the dentist. And I tell people if you brush your teeth and floss, it's probably a good idea not to go ever. What they do is they put mixed metals along with the mercury. They call it, you know, like gold or nickel-plated crowns and so on. And that makes the mercury off-gas that much faster. So your toxic load, and, you know, the thing in chemistry, and again, I'm not a chemist, but I know all the smart people, so I just ask them or I research it. What happens is if you put mercury, for example, and what they call a gold alloy, because it's not pure gold, and let's say a nickel crown, that combination of metals, and nickel is a carcinogenic metal. That is a fact. The information is on the internet. Look up on the WebMD. You can see that, you know, you add the mercury plus the nickel plus the gold alloy, and it's a cocktail. And instead of it being 1 + 1 + 1 = 3, you know, it's 1 + 1 + 1 = you know, 1,000, because it becomes more volatile, the mixture together. So, you know, it's just crazy. It's just really crazy what has happened to the mouths of many. I mean, I've seen infections. I've seen so many things in dentistry that you know, it's astounding to me. But you know what? The people that have these major dental infections and problems and mixed metals, they are not healthy. They just are not. You can't do that much damage to somebody, and the mouth is the source of your health. If your mouth is not healthy, the chances of the patient overcoming all of this toxicity is slim to none. And in other words, I think, you know, over a period of time, it is going to absolutely break down your immune system, because how much can a body handle, you know?
I have a friend who went to the dentist, and they were placing the filling, and they were just about to put it in. And the dentist said, why don't you give me the one with the fluoride? And said that to the nurse. So my friend was never asked, do they want a filling that contains fluoride? Or so I guess just the point that I'm making is that most dentists that I've experienced are not into informed consent the way that Dr. Blanche Gruby is.
I'm telling you, the stuff that Dr. Blanche Gruby has people sign, they have to read it. She makes them acknowledge it. And you know what? That's a real smart. Here's what I think, Pete. If you're not hiding anything, you're willing to disclose, and you want people to be informed. But if you've got something to hide, in California, we passed a law under Prop 65. This had to do with the California Dental Board. I'm sorry to digress back to California again, but we are the trendsetting state. And if, you know,
agreed,
God willing, we'll be able to get, you know, a state ban on mercury there, and then it'll just roll back east, you know,
yes,
which is usually the case. But back in the day, the California Dental Board was mandated by a law that was passed by then-Senator Diane Watson to give informed consent, exactly that. And what happened was, while the law was passed, it was never implemented. So we went after the California Dental Board. It took a couple of years, but finally an agreement was made that would give patients informed consent. However, there was a caveat that said that the dentist only had to give informed consent if their office had 10 or more employees.
Weird.
You see the deal making, you know?
Yeah.
How many mom-and-pop dental offices have more than 10 employees? Well, not many. But the smart guys are doing it under Prop 65, which is the, you know, toxic, how do you call it? It's the warning, you know, it's a warning saying, you know, in the state of California, mercury is known as a carcinogen and a, you know, problem for pregnant women and children, something like that.
I thought a lot about that when I was a kid, looking at all these containers that said, in California, this is going to kill you. But over here in New York, you don't have to worry about it.
What do you think about it? It's crazy, isn't it? I mean, there's no uniformity. And the thing is, that's why, you know, we're working hard in California. But the upside of California, and like any place else, you can always find good people to help push your agenda.
Uh-huh.
You know, I do a lot of, you know, grassroots organizing and so on. And, you know, I try to get people excited to say, you know, it's, you know, everybody in government isn't bad. Everybody, you know, everybody everywhere isn't bad. You just have to find the good ones. It may be a little bit tougher sometimes, but they're out there. And once you get somebody that will work with you for the right cause and, you know, for the big picture, You work with them and you do everything that you can to support them so that, you know, it's a win. It's not easy, but it's doable. It is doable. I mean, we had 3 successes in California. We're looking for many, many more.
We're hoping to ban shale gas extraction here. Maybe it'll roll west, also known as hydrofracking.
I'll tell you what. That is a big problem. That is a big problem for the East Coast. And are they doing it in New York as well?
We have a moratorium on it. I think we're the only state with a moratorium. Well, actually,
really?
Our moratorium.
Good for you.
Actually, our moratorium ran out. I forgot about that. So now we're kind of in this peculiar limbo, but we don't plan on allowing the people don't plan on allowing it here. I don't know about the state legislature.
Yeah, well, you know what? It starts. You know, thank God for social media. I think it's helped us tremendously because we're able to, you know, get a lot of people involved with the cause a lot faster than back in the day.
Mm.
You know, when I started out in this thing, boy, it was phone calls and emails, and oh my goodness, it was brutal. But now, you know, you can slap up a message on Facebook and have a whole pile of people support you really quickly, you know?
Yes.
And YouTube has helped tremendously. You know, 1 million people saw Dave Kennedy's, at least that we know of, you know, when Kelly Gallagher, the filmmaker, who's been following this story for more than a decade, when she posted the Costa Mesa win, which was the first in the country, there were 250,000 views on it.
How,
so it's pretty.
How do people who, you know, want to get involved in this cause participate?
They can go to our Facebook page, Californians for Green Dentistry. And send me a note.
Excellent. Also, for people who have had their mercury removed, but it was done improperly and they got mercury poisoning, what resources are there for people to remediate their bodies from mercury poisoning?
I would, I'll tell you. Yes, the right person. I give me like 1 second because it's dental mercury dams, dental amalgam mercury solutions, and they're a wonderful, wonderful group of people, and they are located in Minnesota, I think, in the Midwest. Let's call it Midwest.
Sure, and people can look that up. And what types of remediation processes do they do? Is it something that's technological, or is it certain foods that are eaten? Or,
you know, there's a lot of things that people can do on their own. Here's the thing, Pete. Here's their website. It's www.amalgam.org.
Great.
There is, they can also go to the IAOMT.org. They can look at a lot of great videos on Dr. Gruby. Is it DrBlancheGruby.com?
And I'll post links to these. But go ahead.
I'm sorry?
Oh, I'll post links to these on the webpage when I upload this interview.
Awesome. Yes. As far as alternative or ways to detox, I tell people that, you know, depending on how toxic you are, first of all, I haven't had fish in more than a decade because it is that toxic. And once you remove the amalgam safely, you want to make sure that you don't add back the problem.
Yeah.
Because fish, which is 70% of the world's population source of protein, it's all contaminated. And that's another fun fact that I learned at the United Nations.
Mm.
And it's because of, you know, they call it anthropogenic mercury, and that's because it's man-made. And mercury is a naturally occurring element, but not at the levels. It actually comes out in volcanoes as well, but not at the level that man makes it. And we all know now that amalgam, mercury amalgam, is one of the huge sources in the world. And until we stop using it, it's going to continue. And shame on us if we let it.
Anita, is there an industry where mercury is particularly a byproduct that then they're trying to sell, like in the instance of the fluoride where it was a byproduct of the phosphate fertilizer industry?
Oh, no, they mine this specifically for for the dental industry. Well, and the other uses, they use it in, it actually is in oil.
Oh.
It is a byproduct, and I'll tell you what, when we were there with the Saudis and the people in the Middle East, and they're like, hey, listen, we need a pass on this.
Mm.
You got to pick and choose your battles. Until we wake up and say, okay, there's alternative fuels that we certainly can use for cars.
Mm.
The amount of mercury that comes out of that region, I think, is significantly less than anything that we can talk about as far as dental mercury. I mean, you're talking apples and oranges.
Wow.
You follow what I'm saying?
Certainly, yeah.
So while they're saying, oh, well, this is bad, and there is another industry that is hugely responsible for massive amounts of mercury, and that is this what they call artisanal small-scale mining.
Hmm. And that's...
And they...
What are they mining for in particular?
Gold.
Okay, and the mercury is found in with the gold?
The mercury is used to extract the gold.
Oh, wow.
Hmm. Yeah.
And then it's also in coal when it gets burned, right?
Yes, yes. It's at coal-fired plants, yes. And it's also at cement.
Wow.
Yep.
What role does it play with cement?
I think it's a byproduct.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Oh, it's wild. If they get that book from the Nordic, Norden.org, I mean, when you see it, and then you say, okay, so these are the solutions, and why are we spending, you know, billions of dollars trying to figure it out when I'm not about reinventing the wheel. If somebody comes up with a great idea, I'm like, okay, why don't we just do this?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
That's my theory, and
you don't have
I'm telling you, you'd think I was talking with three heads, you know?
You don't have to reinvent it. You just got to put some power behind it and get it rolling.
Exactly. And the people from the Norden Council, they are true allies. I mean, if it wasn't for them, you know, one of the delegates from Denmark, and I still owe him a letter, he fought valiantly to make sure that dental mercury was on that treaty. And he, you know, there were a lot of us, they called them NGOs, non-governmental organizations. We had our huge contingency from the International Academy there. But it was the guy from Denmark that just really made it stick and stay because there were special interests, you know. And you once you know who's fighting against you, you have to be very covert and go the back door. But we were successful. And because of this success on the treaty, we're going to have a much better chance of eliminating the mercury usage in dentistry globally.
Wonderful. Well, I thank you very much for the work that you're doing, and I'd like to interview you again in the future to see what kind of progress has been made. And
I would love to, Pete. Thank you.
Yes, and thank you. So, again, my guest has been Anita Vasquez-Thibault, and thanks for taking the time to talk to us.
Thank you so much, Pete, and you have a wonderful morning.
You too.
Bye-bye.
Bye.